I would like to introduce you to my new friend. Its name is Life Fitness. Its nickname is Treadmill. And since the last part of March, I've spent 30 minutes, 3 days a week, with Life Fitness at the cardio rehab center at the hospital. Monday, while I was spending time with my friend Treadmill, I started pondering the readings for this evening. And on Treadmill, I saw the words incline and time, and they stood out to me. As I continue to increase these two aspects, incline and time, my physical abilities have increased, my well-being keeps improving. But I thought, as I was with my friend, how might incline and time relate to my spiritual well-being? We all began at some point in our life, probably at a very early age, memorizing prayers, the Our Father, the Hail Mary, the Angel of God, Glory Be, etc., similar prayers, and this formed a very important foundation for us. But the incline wasn't very steep. Our readings tonight encourage us to stretch and to increase our spiritual incline. What does Koheleth mean when he says, "Vanity of vanities, all things are vanity"? Vanity, or hebel, in Hebrew, literally means breath or vapor. Ecclesiastes was probably written 200 to 300 years before Jesus was on this earth. And at that particular time, God's mightiest deeds seemed to be long past, and the future resurrection of the dead had not been clearly revealed. Koheleth did not believe in the afterlife. He regarded the short time that a person existed and whatever efforts they might have expended was but a puff of wind, a vapor, a breath. In other words, he was saying life itself is without value. Only God gives meaning to life. Apart from God, human life means nothing. Perhaps the book of Ecclesiastes, with its bad news throughout that particular book, the main purpose of that might be to prepare us to hear the good news of Jesus in the Gospels. This evening in Psalm 90, as we sung that and as we heard that being sung, we heard the words, "Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain wisdom of heart." In other words, we're not to slack off, but to grow in our relationship with God and in the wisdom of God, to increase our incline to a higher level of spirituality. In the letter to the Colossians, the author wishes Christians to understand how the effects of Jesus' death and resurrection are evident in their lives. The Christian responds in faith because of Christ's gratuitous acts. The Christian does not respond in order to get something. That something has already been given, and the rewards have been realized. So thanking God for the gift of that salvation, that gift that we have received, in that regard, we are to take love, mercy, forgiveness, and healing out of these doors this evening and out into our homes and into our community, into our schools and our workplaces. In Luke's gospel, we hear about a squabble between two brothers, most likely because their wealthy father passed away. Either the older brother had delayed the distribution of property, or the younger brother was greedy. So Jesus uses this occasion to have a teachable moment for his crowd and for us as well. So he offers the parable of the rich man about the folly of greed and selfishness, and then also what really matters to God. To emphasize his point, Jesus called the rich man a fool. Why? Because this night, he said, this life would end and the stored treasure would be of no use to him. Back in the Jewish culture, traditional Jewish good works included prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. And in Jesus' time, less than 5% of the population controlled 80 to 90% of the wealth. The 95% who were poor, they rented land to farm or to seek out an existence from the wealthy. Greedy bureaucrats served the elite and themselves also were charging extra taxes to the poor. The poor were so burdened that it was not unusual for many to be underfed in times of a great food supply, a surplus of food. Many would actually sell themselves into slavery in order to feed their families. So the rich landowner, blessed with an excellent harvest in Jesus' parable, did the opposite of giving alms. Instead of thanking God and sharing what he had with the hungry and those in need, he gave himself over to greed and to selfishness. The parable of the rich man gives us a warning as well as an invitation. It reminds us that our possessions, whatever they may be, are merely loaned to us by God, and that we are accountable for their use. Jesus teaches that we should be generous in sharing our time, our treasure, and our talents. And you know, we're all rich in some way or another. Maybe even if we're poor financially, we may be rich with intellect. We may be blessed with intelligence, physical abilities, a sense of humor, the ability to encourage, to inspire, or to support others. God expects us to give thanks for all of our blessings, all of our gifts, by sharing them with others in response to that command to love God and to love our neighbor as ourselves. In his classic, Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, the Austrian psychiatrist and the Holocaust survivor, inverts the typical question about the meaning of life. He suggests that it's not ours to ask what life means, rather, life itself asks us what meaning we will give it. I've been reading a small book. It's called Practicing His Presence. It's a spiritual classic by Brother Lawrence and by Frank Lebach. And Lebach wrote this: "We shall not become like Christ until we give him more time." My friend Treadmill reminded me that when we focus more of our time each day on recognizing the presence of God in our daily lives, and we raise our spiritual incline by placing our words and prayers into action, by sharing our gifts with those in need, we are improving our spiritual well-being, and then we are also giving life its meaning.